Couple of notes before we begin the Travis Watson podcast. Thank you so much for the orders over the weekend. If you have not received a completed order status, that means your item was likely backordered. Those will be shipping early next week to mid next week. So for those of you who place an order for one of the Kyle Guy t-shirts or some of the Everlast or other styles, make sure look out for that email, because once that email comes, that means your item is shipped. So have any issues, obviously reach out to us, info@lockerroomaccess.com. And today's guest, none other than Travis Watson, one of the best big men ever to grace the grounds in Charlottesville. And you know, we had him on a list as underrated. It probably should have been underappreciated, but you know, his name doesn't really come up often when we talk about these greats, which he obviously is one of them. I think he's number two on the rebounds list, just short of Ralph Sampson, obviously the guy who is on top of every single list. So, and the name's not named Ralph. Travis is definitely on there. This is an incredible conversation. We kind of go over his career and how he played out of position, basically under Coach Gillen, and the trials and tribulations. And thought, you know, he was honest about his thoughts on transferring and what happened during that Gillen era that could have went well or better. Some of the injuries, the different things that happened. This is an incredible opportunity. And heads up, his internet connection isn't the best. I don't know if it's the Italian service providers, but it's a little patchy. Sometimes his voice gets a little low. You could just tell it's a little spotty. I tried to recover as much as possible from it, but I think it's obviously not perfect, but I think it sounds good. And another note, Mark and Fresh jumped off earlier. We tried to do this one to accommodate the time change, and both of those guys had prior engagements, but we made it work. So unfortunately you get less of them and more of me. So anyways,
Travis Watson now joins us. Travis, thanks so much for coming on all the way from Italy.
Thank you for having me.
So normally we're going to change up today with your podcast, and we're going to go in a different order than we typically do, where Dougie's going to lead us off. But before we do, I just need to say, like, when someone looks up your stats, you had a tremendous career at UVA.
Yeah. Crazy.
Unbelievable. Double figure score every year. From first year all the way through fourth year. Third and fourth year, second team all ACC. Congratulations.
Sophomore year as well.
As an ACC second teamer?
Yeah, second team, yeah.
The Travis, no joke.
Yeah, no. Incredible career. And yet, I mean, I don't – we'll get into this a little bit later. Not mentioned often enough as right. One of the top players to ever come out of UVA. All right. But we'll get into that.
Italy knows.
Italy and a ton of other places in Europe. And a ton of other places in Europe where you played.
The hardcore fans know too, you know, people really follow Virginia.
I'll tell you something about Travis, though. Guys from my era, Trav, if you ever listen to this, that's all I talk about is Brian Stith, June, Corey, whatever. But guys from my era know Trav.
Yeah.
And he gets
all of them.
From those
all
time.
Of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Trav, on that vein, I want to ask you a question. We usually do it at the end, but I gotta bounce. If you had to do your Mount Rushmore Virginia basketball all time, and I'll give you five players you can put on there.
Five players?
Five greatest ever. Whatever way you look at it.
Oh, man, that's great. That's a great at the five spot, I'll go with Ralph.
Yep.
At the fourth spot, I'll go with Junior.
I like it.
At the three, It, for me, because it's more biased, because I'm personal with Chris Williams or Brian Stith. So, I mean, I mean, I put Chris on there. You know, no disrespect to the OG, but I'm gonna go with Chris. My shooting guard, Curtis Staples, and my point guard. I mean, again, you know, personal opinion, Corey Alexander.
I like it.
That'll be my five. And then I'll just come off the bench. I'm cool with that. I'm cool with the sixth man.
Yeah, you could probably replace four positions too at this point, right? Shit, put him on the wing. Get those jumpers
in. I mean, Junior's tough, man. Junior's tough. That's somebody that definitely should be spoken about. He's definitely one of my all-time favorites, you know, especially a Warrior as well.
We were discussing before, like, and I know that's I'm not supposed to say we were discussing before, but who do you think are kind of the unsung guys, Trav? Let's say, you know, it's a different era now. Tony Bennett, you've been out of the country, so you can be a little. Who do you think are the guys that didn't quite get the respect over time? Besides myself.
I mean, like, as we spoke before, one of my favorites also a brother of mine, Jason Rogers. At the time we came in together, and he was, you know, supposed to play the five spot, and I was recruited as a power forward. But he ended up, you know, not getting as much time as, you know, as he should have gotten at the end of the day.
Yep.
So that's definitely one person that, you know, sticks out for me. Another guy that I got to play 1 year with was Colin Deshaun. That was another big guy that I was actually looking forward to playing with because he was a center, and I watched him on, you know, on TV before I got there. Yeah. And, you know, he unfortunately left, but that was, you know, that was another person that, you know, personally myself that I wanted, you know, that I wanted to get to be able to play with as well.
Where did Colin go? I didn't know he left.
I don't know. You know what? I don't know. I forgot where he transferred to.
I didn't realize
he redshirted a year, I think, maybe because he got injured or something.
Right.
In my freshman year, like I wasn't promised to start or anything like that. So I just came in ready. I had a whole full summer, everything. Yep. So I just came in full ready, but I understood that he was coming off an injury. So, right. You know, for me, you know, I'm much faster, 18 years old. I'm almost running circles around him. So, but that's something I thought we was going to put together on the floor because he was a brute, like so strong. Yeah. Made me get in the weight room. So,
he didn't play.
That I respected.
I don't think he played anywhere after, at least not D1.
He might have transferred. I mean, I might be wrong. Maybe he, you know, transferred to Longwood or something. I don't know. I tried to, you know, follow, but.
Oh, yeah, maybe it was Longwood. I vaguely remember him leaving a little bit. So we usually throw it back to how you got started getting serious with basketball. Like, what age was that for you when basketball became the thing for you?
I mean, basketball became the thing for me at the age of 15.
Okay.
You know, that's when somebody was just like, you're really good. You know, and so I was a listener. So I followed people who wanted me around, and they was always instruction. I was always finding myself at that age, even younger, playing with older guys, guys in my neighborhood. I'm from Texas. So they see me, I was a tall 12-year-old kind of. So they was like, come on, man. So I was, you know, I was playing, thinking the tallest guy, being the youngest guy out there on the court sometimes. So after that, it just became something, you know, that I understood, you know, that probably would be able to change my life. So, you know, I started taking it seriously.
And when you say taking it serious, I mean, you were getting training, going to camp, and that was your dedicated sport at that point, or?
I'm Texas football, so, you know, in the neighborhood, we football people, so it's hot outside, and for a while, you know, sometimes for a while we could play for free, and then they start trying to charge us to go to the recreation. So, you know, we end up staying outside longer than going inside with the AC, but we played football outside all day. But you know, after that, it was just dedication. And somebody, I went to a camp. Actually, I went to Liberty camp when I was 15. Randy Dutton was the coach of Liberty, assistant head coach at the time. I went down there, and first time I heard of AAU basketball was in 1996. And you know, that summer was, you know, changing my life. I had to, you know, do some things to catch up. Man, I made a lot of sacrifices, and I, you know, ended up at Oak Hill, you know, Virginia for William Campbell in Naruna, South Virginia. I was there for a year. Summer of 97, I went to Adidas camp. I did five star. I did, you know, a lot of things that summer. I made USA basketball. I ended up going to Oak Hill Academy. Played on a tough team, 97-98. That changed my life. That lets you know that type of stuff. It changed my life. So, and from there, like, Virginia was my molding pot, you know, for the game. But before that, I was a football player.
How did Oak Hill change your life? In which way?
For one, there's nothing around it. And Texas is a city. You know, I'm from San Antonio. I lived in Dallas a long time, so via Dallas as well. But Mount Wilson is nothing at all. You know what I'm saying? You pull up, and the first time I went there was over the summer. And I walked in the gym, and again, I'm from Texas, so I know about Steven Jackson. I'm in the Midwest. I knew about Rod Strickland at the time, Jerry Stackhouse and all that. And I walked in the gym, and I'm like, are these the same people that I see on TV? And coach was like, yeah, that's them. And so it really wasn't a hard decision for me to go to say I would want to attend there if they wanted me. So. That was the hardest change, because you have to focus on basketball and education.
So how was your life before you got there? You said it changed your life. So did you go from somebody who was hanging out a lot to someone who now had no choice but to be home?
Well, no. I mean, I work, you know what I'm saying? We didn't come from nothing. We made, you know, something out of nothing type of thing. And it was just, I went from Dallas. I went to even a smaller town, Brookneal, Virginia. And then I went to Mouth of Wilson. So I downsized twice. So I'm in culture shock. I'm in culture shock, man. Like, woods and different animals. I wake up, I'm hearing chirping, squirrels, roadkill. You know what I'm saying? Your neighbor 5 miles, maybe your best friend, you know, you don't have a bike, you don't have a car, maybe, you know, these type of things. But, you know, there it was able for the chemistry of the players. And I mean, it taught a lot of things progressing for college, you know, especially learning how to study and gaining chemistry with the teammates that I had at that time.
And when did you go to Oak Hill? Was that after your third year or your fourth year in high school from Dallas?
Nah, man. It's not a fourth-year school. So I went there in 97 to 99 as a sophomore.
I'm sorry. Let me rephrase the question. How many years did you do in high school? How many years of high school did you do in Dallas? In Dallas, and then you went to Oak Hill after
San Antonio.
San Antonio.
I did 1 year in Dallas, Texas, at W.T. White High School, North Dallas. I transferred in that summer, and I went to William Campbell in the arena, Brookneal, Virginia. So I played half the season, because I had to sit out because I was a transfer. I played half a season, and then that was my summer, my big summer after that. So I was a sophomore still playing in the summer of my sophomore year. I ended up going to Adidas and all those other camps.
So when did UVA actually come into your picture in terms of just acknowledge, like, in Texas? I imagine you didn't watch or hear of UVA, but when did you actually hear of them and start paying attention?
When I moved to Virginia, actually, when I moved with my guardian at the time, you know, the big UVA fan, so I was on the TV We went to some games over the summer. I actually met most of the guys at 15 in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Oh, cool.
Played with them when I was younger. So I was, my radar came when I was a senior, pretty much. I'm sure I was being, as a kid, like I was a Kentucky, Michigan fan all day. Right. I wanted to go to Michigan. That was one of my choices as a kid, like, if anything, you know.
But Fab Five, right? Time,
man, what? Yeah. Everything was golden. Yeah, so they came up, and then, you know, after that, they recruited me. I allowed them to recruit me, and, you know, just went from there.
And what was that recruitment like for you in terms of your narrowing your list and getting all settled?
I mean, they moved in my top five early because, like I said, I've already visited there. I've been there a lot of times. I've met most of the players. I was already kind of familiar, so it wasn't a whole lot of things they had to, you know, exhibit to put on show for me. But, you know, like I said, I actually went to USA Basketball in Moscow. And I walk into the tunnel, and I see Bobby Gonzalez, and I heard Bubba. That's my nickname back in the day. And I look, and I'm like, nobody calls me that. And I look, and it was Bobby Gonzalez. I was like, wow, they really want me.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, just from that, he pretty much, Bobby stayed on me as much as the other schools did. But, you know, being in Virginia, you know, we got to watch all the games on TV, local channel.
And you knew all the players, and obviously convenience, and somebody who just joined the pod, Willie Dersh, Weekend Willie. Appreciate you jumping on.
What? Willie?
Travis Watson.
No, man. My
What's
God.
Up, man?
That's my God. They didn't tell me this was happening, brother.
Well, when they said you, man. Well, Fresh sent me a link, and he said, Travis is on. You want to join? I said, Travis, I stopped everything. What's
That's
up?
My guy, man. That's my guy. I'm out here chilling. They caught me. They caught me on the string, man. they got me.
Time's up. You still look like you're in college, man. You're looking good.
I appreciate it, man. That's just a lot of rest. A lot of rest. A couple years of retirement. That's it. That's what I do. But I like that view, though.
We're on the we moved to the other side of the city, so we're on the Jersey side. View now, so yeah, we get the nice view of the city.
So what? And your recruitment. When did you actually get to meet Willie Dersh?
I didn't meet Willie until I got to campus.
Okay.
I didn't meet him until I got to my official visit.
And how was that?
Travis, is it true that Weekend Willie was the man on grounds? They say he was.
Man,
the
man. Look. Man, let me tell you, man. Willie, if you remember anything, I was close, wasn't I? Set picks and everything. You understand? No, that was the man. That was the man. The love of the life, man. He looked out. You know, like I said, that was my freshman year. And I had a great time. Great time with him. Great time.
I was going to say, was there a welcome to the ACC moment for you, like a college basketball moment, practice, games? Was there a moment like, oh, here, this is different than, I mean, see, Oak Hill is a big powerhouse program, but was there a step up even from that?
Yeah, man, practice. Pete Gillen practice. That was welcome to college for me, man, because, you know, a lot of times you walked away when I breathe them. Middle, sit them 17s in the middle of practice, Willie, do you remember those?
Of course. Always. That's always the toughest, the adjustment to college.
Don't make that, do three more. Like, what is this?
The thing about Travis was he was so much ahead in terms of his footwork and his and the skill that he had with his hands. I think that let's just say the coaches gave a little flexibility if he was dragging on the sprints. Because how ahead of everybody he was in the post. And his touch on his hands, that's for sure. He never lost to Chris Hunter, though. He never lost to Chris Hunter.
And what do you remember about him coming in, a young Travis Watson, starry-eyed, coming on grounds for you, Willie? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I just remember that point in your career when you're realizing your sun is setting a little bit, that you're looking at the future. And you know, at that time, it was Majestic, Roger, and Travis. I just knew that these guys were going to have a good core, and they were going to be able to win some games. And I think it was that next year after I graduated when guys were jumped out and were really highly ranked. Right, Trav?
Yeah, both. After you left, both of those years when we went to NCAA.
That's
and
right.
And then the next year we went like as high as fourth in the nation.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So it was all the seeds that I planted, right, guys, for that next generation.
Oh, absolutely.
like all seriousness though, like I was young and I just came in and my thing, I wanted to earn their respect. So they didn't give it to me. I think I earned it. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, maybe I did lack, but I heard it later on. And so that was more so I respected out of them. And also, like he said, if he knew he was, you know, he was ready to go, he understood. And you know, like I said, we all played our part at that time. And I loved him from day one until he left. So, you know, those were some good
things. You also could tell right away, because as you become more of a senior or a fourth year, little things mean a lot. Like, so you could tell right away that Trav was a team player.
Right.
And I think the fact that, you know, that leadership or that, you know, he would listen to you. What, you know, if I remember having conversations with him and he didn't have like a, I'm too good for anybody kind of mentality. So, you know, I knew that was going to, you know, help him out in his career post college as well.
Man, Travis, I mean, like, come, go ahead.
So, before I ask the next question, can you guys just describe what a 17 is? Because a lot of the fans may not know that it's a sprint.
Man, that's going line up on the sideline, sideline to sideline, seven touch. So 17, you know, half court, and you just go. And we had to make, and they were timed. So like guards had maybe y'all had a minute.
Yeah, I can't. My 11-year-olds were doing it. They had to finish in like 105 or 110. And then I was trying to remember because I was having like PTSD remembering like how much time we had to finish ours. I feel like it was almost like 45, 50 seconds.
Nah, it was a good minute. It was a minute fast though, brother. Minute still fast. But I think it was.
And
like
if you didn't make it, what would happen? If you didn't make it, what would happen?
Everybody had to run it again. Everybody.
Run again.
Wow.
Run again. That's one thing we did. We ran. And nobody
was
trying to run again.
Of course not. How many times? Do you remember the most amount of times and why you had to run multiple times, like several times in a row because somebody didn't make it?
Willie wasn't there for me. I don't think we ran too many extra times, Willie. Because the freshmen, all the freshmen that came in, We was on point with keeping up with the running. Like we were skinny, we were fast, everybody was quick. This one episode was with JC Mathis. JC Mathis come, we had to do a couple straight and they didn't reduce the number we had to do until you made it. So I'm just like, you know, that's like 10 to 12. You know how you feel after all that, Willie.
I know.
So when you came in to UVA and you're making that decision, was part of it that you had a relationship with you know, Roger and some of the other guys that you wanted to build something from scratch, or were you just kind of taking a shot in the dark here?
No, actually, I committed kind of early. I already knew I was coming to actually, I think Majestic committed before I did. I was there on the day Majestic Map committed.
Okay.
I don't know who knew that, but I was there that day, and I think right when I went back to school, I already had committed. So, you know, it wasn't too much going on. But I played Majestic that summer. When I realized who it was that signed, then I got excited.
All right.
my teammate at the time, Ron Slade, we played him in North Carolina, and it was him and Kenny Satterfield on the team. And we was up at halftime, and me and Ron Slade was giving them the business, and they just went off, and they came back and won. And when I remember that one specific game, my guy at that time was like, "That's who's coming." And I was like, "Wow!" And then that's when I realized he's a McDonald's All-American. That's great to have anywhere. I played with Steve Blake. He was a great point guard. You know, also my junior year at Oak Hill, I played with Taj Hawkins. He went to IUPUI at the time. So, you know, point guard can change your life.
Yeah, and people don't realize his injuries really hurt his career, but he was going to be one of the greats. I mean, the writing was kind of on the wall. He's going to take over the program.
Are you talking about Majestic?
Yeah, Majestic.
It's funny, his dad coached Ty a little bit as a really young kid. That's actually how I got involved with Riverside Church. Was Majestic playing for Riverside at the time? Travis, do you remember what team he was playing for?
When we played against them?
Yeah.
I don't remember the team. He might remember better than I did who it was at the time. But, you know, I just remember we played them that summer, and it went crazy.
So what was his game like at that time? I mean, I remember him as obviously a pass for – yeah, Majestic. You know, for fans that don't even remember, just remember him being injured. Like, what is your memory of him coming in? What was some of his strengths?
Man, one, like, see the floor. Great hands to see everything. He came in a couple times, especially our freshman year. North Carolina changed the tempo. I mean, and he sees the floor very well. I mean, he's fast. He knows how to change. You know, he knew how to change speed at a young age. And just by getting better naturally, that was going to happen because he had the work ethic. And we all had it at that time, to be honest. But I felt that he was a huge piece for the future at that time, because also Donald was still there. That still would have, you know, helped his improvement, you know, his development, his sophomore year. So that would have been 2 years hooping with Donald. Like that was a huge loss for us, man.
So, Trav, when you got to grounds in your first practice, what were your expectations? Were you anticipating playing a lot your first year? Or did you think this spot is mine? Or did you think, okay, maybe I'll come off the bench and get some playing time?
I don't even really remember. They never told me I was going to start, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was never said the job is yours. You know, when I realized, and when we went over everything, I knew that they was down scholarships and it was coming off a 7-man year roster, and it was a building year for everybody. So it was a lot of opportunity for me to come in and start. At that time, like I said, you know, Colin was still there. Willie was there. Jason was coming in with me. Stefan Don also. So it was a couple other guys that would have fought for that position. But like I said, I just went in and I was headhunting, and I was going for everything. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, like, you know, my awareness for the ball and getting those rebounds, it worked. And they started us playing with the freshmen all together. And then they just started mixing up the teams on in practice. And I was finding myself at the 5 spot a lot. And that's where I started at. I was like, well, okay, this is what we do. So, you know, I just ran with it.
And was there someone you modeled your game after in terms of, as a kid coming up?
Not really. You know, like I said, I wanted to be a football player. Like, if you want to talk hands, I like Jerry Rice. I was Shannon Sharp football, Joe Montana, 49ers fan. I was a huge football fan. So, more so with that than people saying, hey, you play like this person. So that was my aggression, you know, my aggression for the ball at the end of the day. You know, I was coming up with it.
So you come in, Pete Gillen starting this basic program. I don't know if you'd call it from scratch. You said you had like Josh Hart walking on and playing and all of that. What was your recollection of him? Because people now look back and say, oh, he was calling timeouts like crazy, didn't know what was going on. But what were your thoughts as a first year bright eyed kid coming in trying to change the game, how was that for you?
Oh man, I mean, you know, like I said, I'm a very coachable guy. I was a very coachable kid, man. I mean, you know what? And again, it goes with your teammates and it goes with the leadership. And again, like a lot of things, maybe there's some things I blocked out that didn't reach me, but maybe Willie was able to tell me, or Donna or Roger or my teammates was able to, you know, to let some things register to me. I mean, I don't know, man. Like, when we did call a lot of timeouts. We was, you know, left with a lot of timeouts in good situations of the game. What do we do? You know, get the ball to the shooter, man. No problem. TJ set the screen. You know, I set the screen, you know, get the shooter open and, you know, go from there. But
Atlanta, he's great. Atlanta X? Is that the play, Atlanta X?
I don't know. I can't remember any of the names. Any of the names.
Fresh always says there was no play.
Guys, it's a joy. Thank you. I got to jump back to the desk, but I just want to say, since I got
I appreciate you, babe.
Okay, the voting for the dunk thing, we didn't address this. I lost 90% to 10% to Dre, right?
Right.
You're aware of this, right? The North Carolina dunk, right?
Yeah.
Everyone was hitting me up. Travis was there. Travis was at that dunk. So when we talk about a historical moment of a UVA beating at UNC, I got 10%. I should have got a little more than 10% of the vote.
I mean, the disrespect on that dunk. You did it for all the years, for all the fans. That's what we talked about.
They don't appreciate it.
And by that time, I wasn't playing as much. So, and I'm white. You got to think about these things. I wasn't in the best shape.
Yes.
The fact that I got up there and dunked. You know what I'm saying? Like, the fact that I got up there and dunked.
Absolutely.
And hung. And hung on it.
And got a T in the Dean Dome.
Was I on the court? Was I on the court at the time? I might have been on the court right behind you.
I don't know, man. We could go back. Honestly, I was like, I should not. I remember thinking to myself, you should not dunk this. But then I was like, why not? I'm that guy right now.
TW can bring it up real quick.
Yeah, no. Absolutely.
Bring that up on your
computer. Yeah,
the funniest thing for those of you fans who watch this or the loyal diehard UVA fans that would know back then was the ref that gave me the tech was Larry Rose. I think was his name. You remember him?
Great guy. Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. But he would favor people, and he would be on some stuff sometimes. Anyway, he would always like to mess with me. And so he gave me the tech, and I went over and I was just like, yo, Larry. I was like, what are you doing? And he goes, you shouldn't have hung on that. And I was like, Larry, that was my first tech in my career, I think. Like, I can't even believe it.
In life.
He's going so fast off of one leg.
You ready? I'm going to share my screen.
Just think, though, Will. Just think. We wouldn't be talking about this dunk if you didn't get that tee.
That's true.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
And Willie, if I had any idea about technology, I would have like created like 1,000 accounts and voted for you.
But you know what, Dundee? I was just gonna say that the voting is probably a reflection of the demographics.
Of the age. It's the age.
Right. Who vote on this thing, right?
That was.
I mean, this one's in traffic. Here we go.
So let me say. So he's 6'8" at least, right?
Yeah, he's about 7'3" wingspan.
Come on,
6'7".
Right, so here we go.
6'7" dunking in Let's traffic go. Is the equivalent of 5 Trav, white Trav, with no one near you.
Talk us through it.
Come
Trav.
On. Well, oh, come
he took
on.
He took his time. He was praying.
Arms up in the air.
He was praying.
Look, he dabbed
somebody. There you are.
Did they show it?
Yeah, you did. So Trav was on the bench. Yeah. Your first person you went over was to Trav.
See? Trav's my boy.
I represent. He knew what was going down. We was winning. We was winning by like 20.
Yeah,
well, watch Will get his steps at half court. That's my favorite part.
I mean, I think people don't realize the time and place on this one in terms of disrespectfulness to UNC and where we were in history.
We had lost how many? It was 18. Was it 18 consecutive seasons at UNC? Wait. Right. It was the first UV.
Hold up.
See?
Why were we playing four?
Look at Gillen. Look at Gillen. Pete was like, wait, guys, wait, stop. Everyone calm down. And he's probably trying to call a timeout, but we didn't have any.
And we're out of timeouts.
We probably didn't have any.
We were out of timeouts, and we were up 20.
Oh, we didn't have any timeouts probably left. Probably none at all. That's a nice dunk by Hunter, though.
That was a very nice dunk. But maybe like 60-40. Come on. All right, guys.
Hey, Twitter skews young. You know that. Come on now.
I know. I love you all. I'm going to jump now, guys. Talk to you later.
We appreciate you.
Bye, guys.
Take care, Will.
I'll stop the sharing that one. That was awesome for Willie stopping.
Man, that's awesome, man. It's been a while.
Yeah, that's cool. So we're back. We're back your first year. P. Gillen's calling all these crazy timeouts, and then you guys go on. You know, Willie leaves. You guys go on this crazy run, and Roger talked about this a lot on the podcast with that game against Gonzaga.
Oh man,
what do you remember about that?
I just remember like a lot of big games. I was in like they give me like 3 fouls and make me turn the energy down. You know, and what's the point guard?
Dan DeKal.
Dan DeKal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he had a good game, man. Can't take nothing. I mean, he was making stuff, and it was just like, you know, what do you do? So if you can't do nothing, you just hoping. I mean, it was a good game. It was actually, you know, like I say, it was one of the ones that really hurt it. You know what I'm saying? Because not that we underestimated them, but, you know, still that, you know, it was a tough loss.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about how that was almost like the turning point of the two programs, right? J.C. Mathis up 3, front end of 1-1 comes out, and that changes, you know, like then they come down and hit the 3. That changes everything because, like, you win that.
I think I fouled out with an offensive foul.
Right, you fouled out. Yeah, that's right.
Something crazy.
And so it was like – all right, you know, Gonzaga moves on. We had an upset. I think Middle Tennessee State was the next round, and there was nobody else in the way of a Final Four. It was what it felt like. And then, you know, Virginia kind of, you know, we get some Majestic gets hurt again. Things go down, and then we go through that lull that we talk about. But that game was great. That game, incredible.
A lot of things changed after that happened.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do you remember after that? Because, like, you know, Roger came on and talked about all the different things and how it's hard for him. What was it like for you at the time for what you were going through?
I mean, for me, like, you know, like I say, I went out and put everything on the floor. So I just knew the magnitude of the NCAA. You know, we went out the first round. Like, you know, I like to win, and, right. it's a loss. And you know, like I said, you're not the underdog in that game. You're supposed to win the game. So you know, at the end of the day, I mean, they got the game. I didn't really feel too much. You know, like it didn't carry with me, but I knew it allowed me to take the next year and add on to how to get back there. You know what I'm saying? To continue to build, and you know, like I said, the start of the next year, we was coming out rocking. We came out rocking because we was hungry. We knew what that felt like. But you know, like I say, things do happen.
Yeah, what was that off season like for you? Did you put in a little extra knowing that that's how your season ended?
Man, every off season I was in the gym. I was in Charlottesville every summer. Every summer.
That's awesome.
Every summer. After my freshman year, I come into college at 220, and actually, I can tell you a funny story. I was talking with my big homie, Harold Jameson. Mm-hmm. I went to Clemson on my recruiting visit. And so we played 5-on-5. And I think I lift a lot of weight at Oak Hill. And he's huge. I don't know if you remember Harold Jameson.
Yeah, I do.
I couldn't post up in the paint. And again, like, he's playing power forward. I'm like, I'm not going to get any PT coming in.
Right.
So that allowed me to understand what was going to happen to me when I got to the in the ACC, because you had big guys like Jason Colley and Alvin Jones, Vitoretta and Shoemaker. There was some big guys that was already in the league that before I got there, they had muscle. And so every summer I tried to stay back and add on to it. just to get, you know, to get my muscle. So I end up getting to like 245, 260.
Wow, that's incredible. And how did that pay off for you on the court? Did you feel an immediate difference, or did it take some adjusting to sort of your new, almost like a new body?
No, I mean, it didn't take any adjustment. You know, at the time we had Lorenzo Rivers as our strength conditioner coach, and he was magnificent. Like I said, we stayed in the gym all summer. So from my freshman to my sophomore year, I gained a good 15 pounds of muscle. And he did that, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And we focused on my legs and getting low and being strong and explosive. And that allowed me to, you know, to rebound and get a lot of those rebounds real quick, because we were working hard. I was in the gym 2 times a day.
Right.
Just doing stuff, just, you know, doing everything.
So that the following year after Gonzaga, I guess this is your third year. You guys do that year. You don't make the NCAA.
No, we go to NIT.
Yeah, the NIT, and then, you know, Roger decides to leave. He hurts his shoulder. He decides to leave. What was that process for you? Was that on your mind too? Were you thinking maybe I should go to the league, or was that is it even on the radar?
Nah, it wasn't on the radar. Like, it wasn't on the radar for me. Like, I was coming there to go 4 years. You know, my mom, that was something my mom really wanted me to, you know, to have, you know, for us. And so I was, you know, that was something that was pressed. And if the talk ever came up, you know, it would have got addressed, but it really didn't until I was a senior. But, you know, it sucks when anybody leaves, yeah. You know, because you feel like a family. And he played a huge role. And even from him coming in and just working hard, because he didn't start.
Right.
He ended up starting later on over Willie. And so from there, he ran. And every year he just, you know, continued to got, I think the year he went to the league that year, he got like 30 in the NCAA and finished with 19 averages for the whole season. So that's a huge piece to take away.
Yeah.
For any team, you know, respectively. And he didn't start as a point guard. So no, for him to make that crossover was tremendous for us, and even for us to do what we did, because he still had to learn himself going and, you know, being an off guard at the time. But coach wanted him to keep the ball in his hand when we had Pete Jennifer. So right. It was, you know, it was a lot of situational things that was going on while we was out there.
So
his junior year.
Yeah. So when he decides to leave, what was the mood like? Especially, I'm just thinking in terms of for you, you're coming into your last season. You want to make a big splash. You're probably thinking, you know, might make big fourth year. What was the mood like for you, or your expectations?
I mean, it's a brother gone. Like, I mean, you know, you're always going to be sad. You know, everybody's going to be sad, but I knew I had to, you know, get back in the gym. You know what I mean? Like, it's more, you know, more expectations being expected out of it. You know, I'm not a forceful person with the game, but after my junior year, I stayed in the summer, at school all summer and worked again. I lost a lot of weight and got lighter. And, you know, even did a lot of guard drills over the summer with coach at the time, Alexis Sherrod. He worked out every day, you know, I was just working, just work. You know, like I say, dealing and accepting the new transfers at the time coming in, and everybody getting older, you know, stuff like that. So I just dealt with the time.
And yeah, we had Devin Smith on a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about you coming in and him sort of like watching you and learning from you and how you carry yourself. What do you remember about him and him coming in?
He can hoop. Like, that's my brother too, man. Like, we've had some special talent, man. Like, a lot of individuals that really had a successful career coming after college. Maybe they get a big rave about in college, but had successful professional careers after. But I knew he was special. He had a touch just like Chris Williams around the basket, but fortunate enough, you know, I believe in him shooting, because he made the shoot.
He could.
And so he came into his own, and he went with it, very humble, always been humble. And it's just been that way ever since I've known him, and it shows in his game. He's an awesome team player. you know, as well. So he just came in, he fit very well. And even with his own accolades, where he was coming from, like, he wasn't a slouch. Yeah. So, you know, what he was bringing to the table for us, you know, fit well and it benefited for itself.
So your fourth year obviously doesn't go as you have liked it and planned. What were you thinking during that year when you obviously you're not going back to the NCAA tournament? Things are going now. Are you thinking pro wise? Like what am I doing for my pro career? Or are you still just trying to salvage?
I was trying to, we still had games to play. We was able to play two more games. Like, you know, right. as a player, you try to play as long as possible, no matter what it is.
Right.
And even if it's, you know, NIT, you know, it's just somebody's always watching.
Right.
And so, you know, and again, that's an opportunity to be and still play in front of a lot of people, no matter how you want to downgrade it or not, you know what I'm saying? It's still something for seniors to have the opportunity to play again.
Keep going.
And be looked at. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. But that's what I was focused on. We had two games to go. Hopefully, and we end up winning against Brown, I think, that year, and then we lost to St. John in New York. My senior year,
right.
The second round. So, I mean, and then, it was just.
Yeah. I was gonna say, then you get your degree, and then what is your post UVA career? How did that kick off? Because, like, did you do the NBA workout? Did you do training camps in summer league or anything like that? I just don't remember hearing. I remember thinking you're going to get drafted, but I wonder what was your process like for all that?
I mean, I did try out like anybody else. I didn't get invited to Chicago at the time when they had Chicago camp. I did go to Portsmouth camp. At the time, and it was in the middle of my final exams. So it's like the horrible time. I'm literally driving there after my final exam, like to play on the game day. Like,
wow.
Crazy stuff. But I went down there. I mean, I think I had a good showing there. And again, I just wanted to, you know, just to hoop, man. I tried out, you know, I went to a lot of workouts, Memphis, a couple other ones. I went to Memphis. Mike Curtis was there at the time.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Actually, he was a strength coach there. He was actually doing my workout. So that was the UVA connection at that time for me there in Memphis. And you know, I did it, and you know, again, you wait for that draft day to come, and your name won't get called. It's still like, what are you gonna do after all these years you put in and all this work? You know.
Right.
And you know, success is, you know, it's spelled out for different people. But mine was to continue to play basketball. So, you know, and I was just chasing it. And I was able to, you know, to come to Europe at that time.
So how did you decide on that? Was there a thought, like, with your agent or whatever, like, try to come back and try to get in the league? Or were you thinking Europe is a good path for me to make some bread and make a good life? Or
at the time, it's like, You go off what, you know, during the draft, you know, while you work out for people, you know, they end up telling you what they think about you, how the draft goes. It's up to you to take what you hear and process it, whether it's good or bad, you know.
Right.
And, you know, and I just took that knowing that I was good enough to play professional. It doesn't, you know, because if I'm not getting drafted, you know, it doesn't make me not, you know, I'm not still a professional guy. You know what I'm saying?
So exactly.
I just wanted to eat good, man. Like I was ready to play. I watched the D League at the time was just fresh, and my former high school teammate Kevin Lyle played in it. I think they had it on sometimes some of the games, or they had it on TV sometimes. You got to see how they was living and stuff like that. And I didn't want that for me.
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, I just wanted to see something different. You know, my major's anthropology, and the world sounded good, so I went with it.
That's awesome. Yeah, we were talking about that with Devin Smith, and just like we don't understand sometimes, like, people don't look at that as a viable option. They just have the NBA in their sights because they know that, but there's such an incredible opportunity overseas, and people don't take advantage. Mm-hmm. And how has it been? You've now, you know, double-digit career overseas. How do you look at your pro career? In hindsight,
I mean, I think I've had a great career. I've been able to play at the highest level. I've been able to play everywhere I wanted. You know, even with the injuries and that, I was excited. I'm excited about the things I've done. I got to see 5-6 different countries. I've got to visit most of all of Europe, you know, just from playing, you know, learn a little bit of each, you know, country, language, this and that and stuff like that. So, you know, a lot of valuable lessons, you know, that take with you on the way. But it, you know, it's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah. So what advice would you give for that player that is now coming out of UVA thinking, making that choice? Do I do the G League route and go and try to make the NBA or do I go Europe? What would your advice be to someone? I know, because the example I give is Anthony Gill. He says hi, by the way. Yeah, and he's a big fan of yours, obviously, and listens to you. So I'm just curious, what do you tell a guy like that?
I mean, if you can make a good living at home, stay at home. You know, I mean, you have your family, you can play in front of. And if you can make a good living in Europe, come to Europe. I mean, again, it's different. It's different options that come with it, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at expectations, you know, it's like real reality. And there's a lot of guys before me, you know, sat me down and just let me know. That's what helped me get my concentration and my focus to be consistent and know that, you know, they're shitting you off if you don't keep yourself polished or be that man or play both sides of the floor. Like, you know, very few often is a player brought over just to play offense.
Right.
And while offense is all well, if you give up 20, if you get 20, give up 20, that's zero.
And is the game, I mean, we know from the NBA and the guys coming over from overseas, but what is the game like? How does the game differ from the game stateside to what you've been playing in over the last 10 some years?
I mean, the biggest thing that probably just normal athletes would know is the 3-second rule. No help, you know, like NBA, that's a help man defense.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that over here, you know. So you might be the guy real super quick and get your foot to take off. And over here, you do that, somebody's there taking a charge because they're waiting on you. So, you know, sometimes it's a big adjustment for some, you know, for guards and sometimes even big men as well to come out here. But, you know, again, it's great talent out here as well being developed. And as you see, that does come to the NBA and show out.
Yeah. Who are some of the guys that have made it, who you've played against overseas that have come into the NBA and made a splash?
Oh, man. Like, let's see. The first guy that I played was back in the day. I don't know if he's still playing, from Italy, Bagnani, Andre Bagnani.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. He was one I played against. Let me see, another one. Bellinelli was my teammate at Fortitudo when I was in Italy. Gallinari was my teammate. Ed Scola played at Vittoria Tau at the time. I played against him. He was super tough. Stefalosha,
wow,
was a kid at the time. So a lot of them was like with kids. More guards than anything, but you know, I came through some.
That's awesome. Yeah, because I think there the rules and requirements there are different, right? They can play pro like 16, 15, 16, whatever age they're ready. What about looking back on your overall career now that you're, you know, retired? What is there anything you would change about, you know, your style growing up playing things for the young kids now? Yeah.
What would I change? Man, I've been shooting a lot of threes.
Learn how to shoot threes.
Man. I mean, it's not about learning how to shoot threes. It was just something like I never did. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you just say like something, you go back. I was just shoot more. Myself, you know, I mean, I'm not saying like, oh, individually, but in team, you know, in the team concept, right. I would take a lot more shots than swinging the basketball and handing it off. That's all right.
Yeah, because when I think about, I mean, I'm thinking your game was foot, like Junior Burrow, like incredible footwork post game. We haven't really had that since. It's like a rare commodity now. You're right. Everyone's shooting threes. Obviously, three is more than two, but that's pretty
good.
Cool.
The game has changed. I mean, you need one good big guy to go down there and get you an easy bucket.
And, absolutely.
You know, these days, it's unfortunate if it's not happening.
So we do this thing where we show some photos and get your reaction. So I'm gonna jump into that. And then we'll start with this is your first year coming in your roster. You got Chris Williams, Donald Hand, yourself, Adam Hall, Roger Meason, Keith Real, Majestic Map, Willie Durst, Stephen Don, Colin Ducharme, Jason Rogers, Chesley Watson, Josh Hare. I was going to say, when I read those names, which ones stick out in terms of memories, thoughts?
I mean, all of them, man. Like, it was, Roger was my roommate my first year. You know, Donald for me was, he was my my guy on my recruit, my host on the recruit. Adam's from Texas. Me and Roger played AAU basketball before I got there. The rest of them, you know, like I say, Chez and me, him, we always laughed about having the same last name. My first nine games, I had to play with a T on my jersey.
That's right. That's right.
So they were like, Watson, we'll see. I was like, okay. And then, you know, things happened and they took it off. So, it was a lot of good memories with everybody, man. Like, it was a good roster.
And if we look at, and here are the results, here's the schedule. We talked, I think we went through a lot of this with Roger. Yeah, this is your first year. This Duke game, you guys played a great game. Overtime, 100-109. And then
that was our first at University Hall.
Yeah, that was at U-Haul. And then at Duke, you guys, you know, 86-106, you lose.
That was our first ACC game coming out. I had like 16. I had like a crazy double.
A good game. So what do you remember about playing? Like, at Duke is the one most guys remember going into the Cameron the first time. What do you remember that for yourself?
I don't. I actually enjoy playing at Duke. Though it was always, you know, a problem. I always enjoy playing. I like playing road games, to be honest. It's crazy, though, when they get loud and you don't hear anything, and then it gets quiet as a mouse in that thing, and you hear Coach K talk. You're like, wow. It's crazy.
That's cool.
I enjoyed it.
I mean, for you, like, you're saying they always would get you foul trouble. I remember thinking, we didn't have a great record on the road, and a lot of it felt like it was the refs, but maybe it was just, I don't know, style of play. But what do you remember about that? Like, being road woes. Do you remember that? Like, it was always a thing during your career.
At one point, sometimes if we didn't start right, or if we – a lot of times I remember, you know, sometimes timeouts have been called.
Right. So,
you don't know how you're going to start, but it's not his fault if you're doing a coach's job to call these timeouts. It's, it's how we started.
Right.
I think a lot of times it's just how we started on the road. That was something that we had to get better with, you know, as we grew together as a group.
Yeah, obviously hindsight 2020, but we've gone over it with a bunch of Pete Gillen guys now, and they everybody talks about communication being an issue in terms of people didn't know their roles and didn't know what was expected of them. Does that ring true for you as well? Did you feel that, a sense of that?
No, not about me, because I'm a big man.
Like, yeah, you get all the minutes.
You can throw me in a Dennis Rodman role, just get defense, go set a great screen, rebound. Right. And that's what they talked a lot about me more so. And it wasn't really about, like, score 20 points or you got to have 15 points today. No, that wasn't that at all for me.
All right.
that I can remember. More so, I knew certain things were going to come with my hustle.
Right. But did you see your teammates, did you see that struggle though? Like, Roger was your roommate and he talked about he wanted to transfer after that first year, but like the struggle of getting minutes and going through, and was that something that you witnessed yourself?
I mean, I wanted to transfer too. I think, you know, all kids at a moment in time had that thought, but I did that myself actually. I did too. But it was just
what talked you out of it? Your mom talked you out of it?
More so my mom. Like, she was like, that's not what you do. Like, you're not gonna run from it. And I didn't understand a lot of things that was going on because I'm seeing these underrated players not playing, or, you know, they should be out there to allow me to get a feel for other things. And that wasn't happening. And I understood that at a young age. But more so me leaving, I would have to start a whole new cycle over, and I didn't want that. And the chemistry that I made with the guys there was incredible. I didn't want to leave that. And a lot of my family was, my extended family was in Virginia at the time, and I just stayed with it.
I mean, did you guys talk about that together as a team? Like, yo, I'm thinking about leaving, or no? Did you keep that to yourself?
Mine wasn't like a big issue. Mine didn't take no long time. Like, I was like super pissed. Excuse me, fresh. I was just super mad, man. And I just wanted to go. It didn't matter where. I just wanted to get out of there. And then it just came back. It came back around.
Was it the losing?
Like I said, all that was factors.
Is just the losing that got to you?
That I just come from Oak Hill. Yeah. Look, I just come from winning the national championship, man.
Right.
I mean, like, what is this? I mean, and you know, like I say, not pointing fingers, so we all just got to do our job. I just, you know, I wanted to dip to myself.
Right.
I wanted to go myself. And you know, like I say, I'm 18. You don't know. You're doing what they're telling you to do. You know, not so much is just good for your own well-being. Then it was for the team, and I did it for the team instead of more so my own well-being, because more so people would categorize me as a center than as a power forward.
Right.
And I'm a power forward. I mean, I've seen all the, you know, the sayings about what they think.
And then here's the second year that you go through. You guys go on a crazy run.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you guys went on this crazy run here, win streak, number four, Wake is your first loss. And you guys are hot. You guys beat Tennessee. They were number four. This was like, you were top 10. This is what you were talking about earlier with Willie, like really turning it on. Now, what was the mood like at this point? Were you guys like feeling good? Everything's going right? Or were you guys heads down?
No, I mean, like I say, like, from what I just remember, I just know we was in the gym a lot.
Yeah.
And everybody wanted to get better. If they was at school or away, and what I understood, Majestic hurt his knee away from school. Right. So, or wherever he did it at. We all were trying to get in that mode to get back to what we knew and what happened. So that was an amazing feeling. And that's, you know, again, any team might capitalize off that. And plus, we should have, I think, after my, you know, my freshman year, we should have been there.
Right.
I mean, we finished number two in the conference. We beat North Carolina twice.
Yeah.
We were decent, but I understand the blue blood mentality.
Yeah, you come in. I mean, the one weird.
You know, the Final Four that year.
Right. And this is the Gonzaga year, right? This is that bracket that you should have been in that Final Four.
This is my second year.
Yeah, this is your second year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you guys have anything stick out to you in that year when you go back trip down memory lane, get the big win, Duke.
Like we was beating like Maryland, Wake Forest back to back games, and like NC State, like even playing at NC State is a tough, especially at that time. Like,
RBC Center.
Man, they had some tough dudes down there in the paint, man. The big dude, let me think, I can remember his name. Damon Thornton, Ron Kelly. That's some big dudes down there. It was really tough to play down there.
And then I'm just going to go into a few images here. Here's this one.
I think that's after that Duke one.
Yeah, this is after the Duke one. And you guys are on the scorer's table, I think. What do you remember about that night?
It was amazing. It was amazing. Right after we won, like, they rushed the court, and it was like, where do you go? And I just followed Adam because I was close to Adam. So I just went wherever Adam went, and I was there with him. And so that was an amazing night, man. And then I think we had another big win after this, too. So it was just like, you know, back-to-back adrenaline going.
It was on at that point. Yeah. And then here's another picture. That's literally what I was going. The answer four is on the feet. I love that's my favorite shoe.
Favorite shoe
we wore. Oh my god! So you've got Donald Hand, Roger Mason, and yourself right here in this picture in the huddle. And you got your Iverson.
Good picture too.
Iverson's on. My question was literally that you guys go from Reebok, and then you've had and one. You've had. You know, obviously everyone's done Nike Oak Hill thing. So what were your thoughts on the gear back then for Virginia?
Oh, man. I mean, Reebok, they upped it when they started giving us stuff from, like, Allen Iverson inspired.
Yeah.
Like, the gear started getting baggy and, you know, the shoes. Reebok was sending up, and I love these shoes. Those are the best shoes that they gave for me.
Yes.
For my feet. Other than that, I wasn't trying to wear any other ones. And I think I finished my year out playing only in those. And one wasn't great. I was spraining my ankle in the Latrell Sprewells. We had these other shoes. The gear was okay, but the shoes was horrible. And then, you know, graduation. So 2 years there, and one, 2 years Reebok.
The Velour. Yeah, the Velour. The Velour suit.
Did we get a Velour? No, we didn't get a Velour, I don't think.
I think your last year you got a Velour and one. And here you go. Here's the photo.
Man.
Headband game. Yeah. What went into the choice of headband that year?
Oh, man.
It looked tough. You know, I'm not going to lie. It looked tough. It was different.
No, you just got to be tough, man. You just got to, you know, be able. If you actually look on them, that would be my left eye swollen. I had stitches. I had stair strips. And it was almost like I wasn't supposed to play because my eye was fat. So
you threw the headband on.
Yeah, well, Sue was like, what would help you play? Because I was afraid. I'm like, this is my, you know, my eye, my face already. Yeah. Like, it's kind of. You know, I can't really see, but I don't want to just get brushed, you know, super hard. And I said, if I can wear a headband, and let's just see how I feel. So I practiced in it a couple times, and then they let me play in it. But the headband, the N1 headband, so small, I'm trying to keep the sweat out my. Oh, man.
And
I'm
then,
trying to keep the sweat out my eyes and the stitches on my face so I can play the game.
Hey, I don't know. When I look, I remember everyone made fun of those N1 things, those uniforms. Like, everybody can stand them. Yeah, then there was, like, the N1 mixtape that was, you know, the thing back then. And then we get the jersey, and then Pete Gillen's running running gun style or whatever, Atlanta X, no plays, whatever you want to call it. In that hindsight, I don't think they were that bad. Like, they look kind of
The jerseys.
Yeah, the jerseys. People, I remember Virginia got all the grief for having this, but I'm like, this. It looks pretty clean to me. I don't know.
Like, I mean, it's clean as gonna get, man. You can't really do too much with the Virginia. I mean, yeah. I don't know what else they was gonna do, but I didn't really like the shirt part. You know, the wide collar
like
part.
Yeah.
Yeah, you felt constricted, but I mean, at the end of the day, okay. I just didn't like the shoes. Like,
and
shoes, no.
And then the jersey itself was like 30 pounds. I got Keith Jennifer somehow. I got it from him. And that thing weighs like 50 pounds. I don't know how you guys play with those.
But if you consider Keith Jennifer weight.
I know. That's what I'm saying. He was tidy. And then here's this next one I found. Travis Watson 2018 basketball skills camp.
Yeah. I was at home. Go ahead.
I was going to say, how often do you do this? Is this an annual or just whenever you get around that have the time to do a camp, you do it?
At that time, you know, just came with a good friend and we put that on. These last couple of years I've been, you know, dealing with some stuff and actually this year, this COVID stuff. So we've only been able to do it that year. But, you know, again, I look forward to doing things like this to give back to the kids.
That's awesome. Yeah, so this is going to be news to a lot of people. We're going to try to do a little online social distance training session in camp. Maybe we'll have you jump on for 5 minutes if you have the time.
Yeah,
I think Mark's going to host it. We're going to have Ty and Justin and some of the other guys jump in and just give like one drill, a couple minutes. We'll try to get all the kids on UVA fans a little workout. We'll let you know on that one. And then here is the next one. This is like the infamous, like, you know, I don't know if he's going to win the NBA Jam dunk contest thing, but got the answer fours are my favorite.
Told you. Well, they do something to your feet, man.
What do you remember about Adam Hall and his dunking ability? I mean, you had it too, but like, what were those practices like? What was he doing?
Not like that. Adam had like hops like people today do. Like everybody has hops that now. So it's more frequent to see somebody of this nature do that at 6'6". And in practice, I mean, he did it a lot, but like more so like in the summer, the pickup game, when, you know, he can just take over and don't pass the ball and just do what, I've seen some incredible athleticism from my brother, man. It's crazy. This right here in game, he always goes for the box anyways.
Look at that. That's incredible. Like his forehead is at the rim. He's above the box.
When you have a teammate like with that type of jumping ability, you expect him to jump to the box.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like if it was me and somebody tell me the ball is too high, then I would say jump for the box. So that's where I'm throwing it.
That's amazing. I mean, that team, you guys were – I'd love to see the stats on how many dunks you guys averaged a game. That's definitely the most – it's probably post-Ralph Sampson in the style of play. There's a lot of dunks.
It comes with a great point guard.
Yeah,
underrated.
Man, definitely.
Talked about more. I mean, because, again, you know, rebound, outlet, right. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to say, yeah, absolutely. Like, I feel like when we looked through that roster in the beginning, like, talk about the lost generation we were talking about earlier, of hoops, so many underrated guys on that. Donald Hand is another one that is just, like, no one ever talks about how great he was. It's amazing to me.
Feisty on the ball, like, could get up the court in, like, 2.1 seconds. Like, shoom, like that.
Yeah,
you know, again, even at his time, he was top 10 player as well there.
Exactly, he was. And we don't really hear his name, you know, talked about with the greats.
Why, though?
I don't get it. Yeah. And I don't get it. It's really bizarre. Maybe we'll just have to start the trend and talk about him more, I guess.
I hope.
Put his name up more.
Do justice. I mean, he's an ACC legend as a point guard. In the ACC, I mean, what more do you have to prove?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of that thing we talked about where it's like, maybe it's all of college sports, but there's a lot of fair weather fan. Like, you don't make the NCAA tournament, a lot of people don't see. You don't make those if you're in a lull for winning, and people just don't see it. It's kind of sad. Like, people don't come to games then when we're not winning, and people don't go to NIT games. People don't appreciate it unless you're in the tournament, which is like a kind of a sad thing to do.
And some people get spoiled with winning.
Yeah.
Like they can't appreciate a good thing when they, you know, when they see it. And and I think at that time we did supply a good up tempo
style of basketball, yeah. Why do you think
was it perfect?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't perfect.
I was gonna say, what do you think went wrong during that Gillenaire? If you obviously hindsight 2020, but when everybody's got their theory on like what happened, what would you say happened that didn't go right for Pete?
I mean, you know, Pete is a great coach, though, and at the end of the day, like we just all was a slot over. Everybody was a slot over, like. I've seen places where people told me, oh, he's a five,
right.
You know, with a four-man body. No, no, no. No. I should have played at the power four position,
right,
as I done in my professional career and had great success at doing that. But everybody played out of position, and we all try to do a great job at what was asked of us at that time. And so that made me at the five. That made a smaller roster. But when you're having success, then you just go till the wheels fall off. Right. I think that's what happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of that, right? Because I guess you could say injuries definitely was a big part of it, but recruiting, I guess? I mean, it's tough to recruit that style at UVA, I imagine. I don't know.
I mean, if you're talking about recruiting, like, it's like, who are you recruiting? Like, like I said, who are you bringing in to fill that, you know, that style? But also, I mean, his assistant at the time before I got there was Bobby Gonzalez. He left. He went to the NCAA. Tommy left. He went to the NCAA.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, player, coach, whatever you want to say, like, what is the problem?
Right. Hindsight 2020, obviously. Here's this next
one. I wish myself personally I had somebody 6'10 down there on the block.
Right.
I wish that myself. I've had that professionally. And
it changes the game.
It is what it is. I mean, because I know what I've always been capable of doing. Like, you know, but I've done what my team needed me to do to succeed. So whether that gets you a great realm of talk about, I wasn't in the game for that, but people respect the game, and that's all that matters.
Right. Here's this next photo. UMBC celebrating their win over Virginia. Where were you? Did you watch? What was it like for you to see this?
Oh, man. I mean, I watched it. You know, it was disheartening. And again, man, when you have the target on your back, and I've had seasons where the target on your back and you lose at the wrong time, that's a horrible feeling.
Yeah.
And at that time, more so the loss, me knowing some of them guys, you know, personally, my heart went out for them.
Yeah.
Because nobody want to be the first out, and also you think you're supposed to win, and everybody's there like you're winning, you know? And it doesn't happen, but sometimes, you know, some things sweet don't happen until it happens this way.
Yeah, well, like, I remember thinking, like, what went wrong? I mean, did that go through your mind? Like, hey, what happened with Virginia? Did you reach out to anyone, talk about it, or wait?
I mean, I've had discussions, but I mean, you know, as a player, as you know, as a person, I wasn't trying to really depict what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, again, sometimes, you know, these type of things happen. Like, it's a lot of people have never been to the championship.
All right.
And this is it's a championship game. Every game is a championship mentality game because that's what you're there for. You can't lose. And again, like, that shocker in their head let them know what focus they have to, that they brought the next time and even greater. So, you know, I didn't over, you know, analyze it. I've lost, you know, games being favored. I've lost, you know, championships being favored, and you know, I know that feeling.
And then the reverse of that.
Hey, Bittersweet.
This Tony, for people listening, this Tony been a screaming with the scissors in his hand. What has your relationship been like with Coach Bennett?
I don't have a deep personal relationship, but I was around the team for a while, some years back, and I got to be around them, and I enjoy everything about him. I love the things that he's done with the program. I was there around the time of Michael Scott ending and Brogdon freshman year and all that time.
Yeah,
but I love it. I love him. He's a great example for what he's doing.
And then the next one, this is in Minneapolis. Dev, Joe, just Dev, and Malcolm's, in Minneapolis on the floor watching One Shining Moment. But where were you? What was your championship experience like? Where were you watching it? What was it like?
I was here in Milan like this on the computer screen. I was screaming like, this is what it is. So now I get to talk everything, for a long time, and we're still reigning champions. So you still get to talk and enjoy that.
right. It's incredible.
How bittersweet is that, though? Just let that linger for free.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Was there a lot of pride in this when you were watching this? Because I imagine you heard it after UMBC. But I mean, what was the feeling like for you as a proud alum, and you did a lot of the legwork to get us to this point?
I mean, just being a part of the history, man. Now you can say, the alma mater you rep, the national champion, and again, like the tradition that he's established there now, and the things that he's doing and he's molded that program into is outstanding. And this is what it's brought, a championship. So whether the doubters, if he needed big dogs or not, he got it done. And so, he solidified.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing, not going to lie.
Yeah, because, I understood too many people wasn't happy with the ACC championship he was bringing home. So, these type of things, also make it, even better for the program.
And here, we'll end it with one last photo here. This is all the guys kneeling for injustice. This is after Colin Kaepernick started this. So this is four some odd years ago now, and all the guys kneeling. And then obviously everything that's transpired. But have you seen this before?
I haven't seen this picture, but I like it. It's nice, though. I'm glad that's the whole team.
Yeah, it's the whole team at the time. They all, after practice one day, they went, knelt, took the picture, posted it on the official Virginia account, which I thought was really cool.
Well, there it is.
Yeah, a lot.
There it is right there.
So then I was going to ask you, all that's going on today, you've been overseas. What has been your comparison of sort of like the police mentality in all the regions you've been as a black man overseas versus as a black man in America? Like, what is that contrast, or is there a difference?
I mean, there's a difference. I mean, I think more so, like I said, I've been in Europe since 22 years old, and I'm 39 now. Half my life, and me being home, I was home for like a month. So I haven't really had the chance to interact that much in my adulthood with the police like that. And I've had interaction. I've been through that in Virginia, racial profiling, driving a car,
right.
And a couple other things. But, that didn't stop me from just keeping my focus and going, doing what I needed to do. Over here, I stay in my lane. I live, I go to work, I go home. I mean, I'm older now, so my life is not the same as it was, when I was, younger. So I see the police all the time. Are they stopping people like that or these things? I haven't seen that. But, with that being said, like, nobody here can own a gun.
Right.
Or if they have a gun, they have some type of special situation to have it. So So I think that's probably a whole different fear aspect with the police doing their job here than some of the things that are happening over there.
Do the police have guns over there? I've heard they only have tasers, or is that certain regions they're full on?
I mean, I've seen some with it. I've seen some without.
Okay.
I mean, like I say, my first time in Europe, I went through France, K-47s, just sitting like across the chest.
Wow.
That was my first time ever seeing that in my life. I was like, well, what is this?
Wow.
What is this? You know what I'm saying? And I'm with a high school team at the time. So that shocked me. I've never seen that before in my life. But, you know, end of the day, you know, like I say, the civilian doesn't have a gun like that. So if it is something, it's probably more dealing with a knife, or they, you know, beat them up with a baton. You know, and again, I don't really look, you know, search that out. I'll just stay in my lane.
That's awesome. So what are your plans now? You said, you know, you retired now a couple of years. You're still in Italy. Is that home for you and your family now?
Yeah, I've been a resident. I've been a resident out here for a while. I've been retired for 3 years more so. I've been getting an education out here. I'm a high school coach at a private school here. So I do coaching as well. So, I mean, it's nothing strenuous, you know, just, you know, recharging my body, the bones. I have faint pains here and there.
Right.
Athlete pain, like any other guy has.
Your basketball, you know, feet are tired.
I don't play basketball anymore.
Yeah.
I would train you until your feet hurt. You right. understand? But for me to do it, I can't do it. I don't have any cartilage left on my knees.
Oh, we appreciate you so much jumping on. I know it's late for you, so, or early for us, which is why Mark and Fresh obviously work. Jumping in, but we so okay. appreciate anything else for the Cavalier fan out there, Wahoo fan out there that we missed on this one?
Nah, man. I mean, I hope the history will be spoken about again, man. Just talk about guys that deserve to be spoken about.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, you can start with actually putting some more jerseys up.
Please, sure.
Somebody explain to me, because I don't know. I mean, maybe as an alumni, I would call somebody and ask. I don't know. But why are there no, you know, why are any more jerseys up? You don't have the retired number, but I think some guys have proven themselves in the conference to be top conference players. Like, I mean, I've seen other schools retire, you know, people's jerseys, not jerseys, but name or whatever. And they're not all America's in NBA.
Yeah, like Maryland. I remember Maryland, they retired, like, everybody.
Hey, you know what? Most of them have a national championship or ACC, you know, tournament situation as a team.
Right. Right. No, we'll do our part. And make sure we're trying to bring it back with Locker Room Access, and shine the light on the history and bring you guys back to talk about the current team and past and compare it. And we feel like it's important for everybody to remember the greats like you and not be lost, because it's kind of a shame, right? The kids today now have YouTube; they can go on there and their videos and their highlights just live on and on. Whereas we were just talking like Willie and Fresh and Smith and you and Roger, like, no highlights. They're just not on there. So we're going to do our best. We're going to go back and try to dig them up and do the work.
Man, think about the time then when somebody actually knew you was really good.
Right.
You were in the paper.
Right.
It wasn't no internet. Nobody knew
Instagram.
Who you were. They seen you in the paper. Seen you in the paper or heard, you know, by mouth and then verified it, you know, seeing it. But, you know, shout out to all the young kids that, you know, that is providing a better opportunity. That everybody is not fortunate enough to get in the paper, and that's the way of the world now. But you know, it is what it is with that.
Yeah.
But I like what y'all doing, you know, with this, and you know, like I say, you know, keep doing what y'all doing, man.
Yeah, we appreciate you.
This is good. This is good.
We have some gear for you. I have no idea how to get it. I mean, we got to get it to you somehow. I like your Shut the Hell Up Juice shirt. We got.
You see my boy?
Yeah, hell yeah. That's awesome.
Shout out to my homie, Mod Hog out there, man.
He does our football podcast.
That's my guy. Yeah, that's a brother of mine too, man. I was able to be close to him while I was at home work. While I was in Charlottesville, the same time I was at UVA.
Yeah.
Through family member, and we clicked up, and you know I've been supporting his movement ever since, and you know now he's doing his thing, man.
Yeah, he is. He's great. He does. Him and Tony Covington do our podcast for football, which is like this. And they're getting on. They're getting football guys on every week. It's great. I mean, we just
trying to do it, man. Man.
Yeah, he's great.
He's a real personality, though. So
he's great.
Shout out to my boy.
Absolutely. So appreciate you. Be safe out there. We'll link all your info below. I know Facebook. Yeah, you pack Twitter, Instagram, whatever you got. We appreciate.
I don't have
too
many things. I'm not the tech. Not you know the technical guy like that. But
we'll get you.
We appreciate you. You know, you have what you need.
Thank you so much, man.
Appreciate you having me on and you know taking the time and stuff like that.
Absolutely, we appreciate you so much.
Sends it down with a tomahawk slam.
Short. That's the win here.
Up the front. This is the